Mr. Hayward, Reel 5. We were talking about your training at Catterick, and I think the next point we're on to really is the passing out parade or the completion of the course. What happened? How were you assessed and what happened at the parade?
The parade itself took place on the Bank Square, which was some distance from our own particular bank room. And we would be marched there, all smartly dressed, polished, and we would be given some drill movements to do on the barrack square as a complete squad. And we would join with several other squads. And there would be a band playing at certain points, and there would be all the officers of the training unit sitting at a certain point on the square. And I expect the whole thing perhaps lasted about an hour, at a guess. And after that, we dispersed back to our bathrooms. And that would be the signal for us to get our freedom of the town. And I expect the sergeant in charge of us had a few words with us. But I don't remember us getting any particular certificate or anything to say that we passed our training. We would be just told that.
That sergeant, is this the Geordie sergeant? Because you've got a couple of stories about him, and one about shaving, another about a route march, just generally the way he treated you. Well, can you tell us what he was like? Do you know his name?
I don't remember his name.
Just a Geordie?
Yes, just a Geordie sergeant, and we would have to call him sergeant. But nobody ever referred to him by his Christian name or even his surname. Just a sergeant. So I just don't remember his name. We must have heard it at some stage. But he generally chivvied us around and made us do what we had to do. But I don't remember him ever sort of getting hold of anybody. He might, in rifle drill, he might throw a rifle at a recruit to see if he caught it. That was done. I don't think it was done to me, fortunately. I don't know what I would have done. I wasn't all that good at catching things, but certainly it didn't happen to me. But yes, there was the shaving incident.
What was that?
Well, it was because I joined in July 1941, which meant I was just over 19, and I hadn't really started shaving then, and I didn't particularly want to. We were all issued with a razor, but I hadn't got any particular bristly stubble that I'd have hair on my face. Very soft hair, as it was before you started shaving. But the sergeant spotted it one day and said, "What do you call that fluff on your face, Trooper Hayward?" And he said, "Get inside and get it off immediately." So I then let start shaving, and I got away with it for, I could get by a couple of days without shaving, but gradually it grew stronger and stronger, and I had to do it every day. And I was very annoyed about that, because I could stop in bed a bit longer in the morning than the others started shaving. But no, I don't remember him being as a bullying sergeant, in the sense that he'd get hold of anybody, or even thrust his face right up to yours. He would shout at you, and he would introduce a few unusual words, but they weren't particularly revolting words, the words you'd heard before, but he'd managed to accumulate quite a vocabulary.
What about the route marches? Because there's a couple of stories in your memoirs about that.
We marched everywhere. Everywhere we went, to a particular class, we would march there in a squad, and we got quite used to that. As our feet got accustomed to the boots, there was no problem there, and occasionally we would be marched a bit longer somewhere, you know, just for the drill movements and so on. But not too much time was spent in route marching. They took advantage of the fact that the classrooms were at some distance from each other, scattered around the barracks. And so we marched to those, and that was probably regarded as almost sufficient. There's one particular day when we were coming back from a class, and one of the lads, probably feeling happy that the class was over, started whistling a tune, and there was a sudden sharp command of squad, halt. And then he'd say, right, turn, so that we were all facing him. Now, he said, who's the musician? Who's the musician's dead silence? Right, he said, I'll give you another chance. He said, will you tell me who is the musician amongst you? Nobody answered. Okay. Left turn. Quick march. Respirators on. We didn't know what was happening. We put our respirators on and quick marching. Then he said, double march. So double march with our respirators on. We were wheezing like anything because you couldn't get enough breath through them. Then he said, pointed to an air raid shelter, sort of a mound with grass over the top, and he said, double march over that, round and round, up and down, up and down. We were really in a dreadful state. We had to put our fingers in the side of this rubber mask to let some more air in, as we couldn't get enough air through this gas container, gas, you know, whatever we call it, and a filter. So that taught us a lesson, you know, that we had to keep quiet when we were on the march. I think we knew who the musician was, but we didn't punish him for that, because I don't think any of us knew what was going to happen at the time. But that was his way of punishing us, this sergeant. He'd make us do something energetic and regret what we'd done before.
Now, after the passing out parade, now, when would that be? What would the date be then?
I think the date I joined was the 17th of July, so if you take 6 weeks from that, that would be about the end of August. And then after that, the whole situation changed. We got our freedom, as I said, we could go out. But then the training became more specific, according to what each individual had chosen to do, gunnery, wireless, mechanics like myself, driving. That became more intensive then. The drivers, for instance, were out every day driving tanks or even vehicles. Wireless operators had their classes, gunnery classes and so on. I never remember being taught how to fire one of the big tank guns. I've been taught how to fire machine guns and rifles. I don't think we had the Sten gun in those days. I don't think that had appeared on the scene in 1941. Pistols, yes, pistols. The Smith & Wesson, I suppose, pistol.
What sort of training did you get with that? Because they're quite difficult to use, aren't they? They're inaccurate.
Yes, I'm always very amused at these Western films when they show people shooting with pistols, because it would be extremely difficult to be such a good shot with a pistol at some of the distances they show in the films. We had to get very close to targets to make any impression on them at all.
How close?
Say from that window to the garage, which would be what, about
10 yards?
Yes.
If that.
I had to get very close, and even then you weren't sure you were going to hit, because a pistol, with not having a very long barrel, the slightest movement is going to deflect it, and even when you actually fire it, it's going to kick. So I don't think we did all that well with pistols. We could get the bullets on the target, but not with any great accuracy.
Now, you had some leave, and then you were sent on a motor mechanics course in Bournemouth at Ewan's Garage.
Yes. Now, the thing is that at the end of August, you see, you've got 4 months left of that year. Well, I must have spent those 4 months in the Kettering tent workshops.
What were you doing there, then? Let's go do that first.
Well, they were putting us through elementary jobs, like cleaning up parts of vehicles ready for assembly. We were given jobs like that to do, and also watching the, you know, skilled mechanics doing their assembly.
So you were being trained as a fitter? Was that the title? Would that be the title? Were you being trained as a mechanic? What did they call you?
I was officially described as a motor mechanic, but I did have a fitting course down at Bovington.
Was that then or later?
That was after the Bournemouth course.
Yes, we'll come back to that. So at the time, so it was elementary motor mechanic training in the workshops.
Yes, and there were times when there weren't any jobs to do, so we were just floating around doing nothing in particular, attached to the workshops, and that's where we had to be if any officers came around to inspect. And it was actually a little offshoot to a big hangar which contained a lot of these ancient 1920s type tanks. We didn't see any of the Great War type tanks there. They'd probably been put in museums. But there were some of the early 20s and later 20s type tanks there, which we used to play around in and have great fun.
What sort of things would you do?
What, in this sort of mucking about? Well, we'd obviously in those days we liked to have a cigarette, and I wasn't particularly a smoker before the war, only sort of schoolboy type smoking, the odd one. But they were too expensive, basically, for people with slender pockets. But in the army, of course, you could get them fairly cheaply, and sometimes you were given them. So we used to enjoy our cigarette. And because smoking wasn't allowed in this hangar, we used to go inside these old tanks and puff away in there, and what was amusing was that they had these periscopes, visors, you know, everywhere, and all around the tanks, and you could position yourselves to spy out anybody coming, and then get out of whatever door was convenient where you wouldn't be seen coming out. Some of these other tanks literally had almost like normal house doors in metal. They had a handle and hinges, and they didn't open on the top of the tank like the modern ones, they'd be in the sides. So you could get in and out quite easily.
And what actual work would you do on them? Fitter, mechanic work?
Well, those old tanks in the hangars, we never saw them being used. They'd been relegated, I would imagine. They would probably eventually become museum pieces, and they were there just somewhere to park them.
Did you actually work on them, though?
We didn't. No, we didn't work on those. We worked basically on the vehicles that were in use for training purposes.
What equipment did you have in the workshop and that you were expected to start becoming familiar with at that stage?
Well, I remember they had a little forge in there, you know, like a blacksmith's forge, only a modern version of it. So they could heat things up, heat metal up, forge things, and they had lifting tackle there, you know, block chains on a metal girder so they could hoist engines out and gearboxes and things like that, rear axles if necessary, and so we were...
What about tools? I mean, did you have lathes and things like that, or...?
Good question. I certainly never used a lathe. I would imagine that it was a fairly basic workshop and it wouldn't have a lathe. They would probably send things away if they needed that kind of machining. They would certainly have grindstones and things for polishing up metals, buffing machines possibly, but I don't remember seeing a lathe.
Now, so you were there for 4 months till the end of the year when you went up to Ewan's garage.
Yes.
on a real motor mechanics course. This is,
yes.
That was to be your trade, is it?
Yes.
Was this your trade training then, formal?
That was training for the trade, yes.
And what's this Ewan's garage? Is it?
It was a civilian garage in Holdenhurst Road, Bournemouth. And it was run by a civilian, but it was all fitted out for army use. And everything was in a dismantled state there. So how they'd done it, I don't know, but they'd actually sawn engines in half so that you could see how the interior of an engine was, and they'd all painted up, right, they'd clean up and dried out, you know, and painted in different colours, so they looked very attractive. If only repairing engines and things had been as clean as that, it would have been heavenly, but for training purpose, it was ideal. You could see exactly how things worked. And it was a wonderful course. It really was. I always find it amazing that at that time of the war, when things were quite critical and Britain was almost on her own, I think this was before America came in, I'm amazed that they allowed us so much time for training. 3 months on course, and then another month at Bonington on a fitter's course.
Oh, come. So what did you actually learn, would you say, at Ewan's garage?
Learned all about, well, the whole gambit of engines and vehicles, including tanks, the designs of tanks, how they operated, the type of gearing used in a tank, to connect the engine with the works, you know, the driving axles. And as far as vehicles were concerned, all about how to time an engine, how to...
How did you time an engine? I mean...
Well, you had to get the flywheel of the engine in a certain position, and then you had to get the distributor, which distributed the electricity spark to the sparking plugs. You had to get that into a certain position, lined up with this notch on the flywheel. And also make sure that at that point, one of the pistons, one of the marginal pistons in the engine was in the up position, ready for the spark. So that when the spark came, the mixture had been compressed and the piston would be pushed down with the explosion that took place in the cylinder. And you had to learn all about that.
Would that be what we call tuning an engine, or with this timing business, or is that different?
Partly, yes, that would be part of the tuning process.
What else would be?
Well, you'd also be involved with getting the right petrol and air mixture for the engine. So that meant adjusting the carburetor by the means of the various screws, and also checking that the carburetor was in a fit state, not dirty, and that the gaskets that held it together were not broken. Then you go through all the bits and pieces associated with the brakes, changing the brake shoes on the drums of the vehicle, adjusting a hydraulic brake system, making sure the hydraulic oil was to the right level.
Now, would that be, or would you have a theoretical grasp of the hydraulics, or would you just understand how to adjust it? Do you see what I mean? The difference?
Yes, I do. No, they didn't go too deeply into the theoretical side, but concentrated on the mechanical side, the operations. And then you have to do ordinary jobs like changing a tyre, mending a puncture, checking wheel, checking steering for alignment.
Electrics?
Yes, a certain amount of electrics, learning about coils and magnetos and dynamos, how they worked and what they were for.
And did you enjoy this?
Yes, very much, very much. Yes, it was a good course. Yes, I...
Where did you live while you were doing it?
We certainly lived very close to the garage. I can't remember what type of...
Was the garage, you said it was formerly a civilian garage, was it still doing civilian work? Was a sort of army team sort of training there, or was it just used as a training garage?
It was just used as a training garage because there was nothing else sort of interfering with our studies. Nothing else was going on. I would imagine with the war being on and petrol being rationed that that side of things had died down, and they probably jumped at the chance to open up as a training unit.
And the trainers, they were civilians or army? Or were they people who were civilians who'd been given ranks in the army?
I think that was what was refreshing about this course, that we were away from the army and the civilians were in charge, although I suspected that the chief of this garage had had some kind of military background. Although he always addressed us in civilian clothes, he always talked to us as if he was a major or somebody, you know. He had that air about him as though he had a military career.
But the mechanics training, you were, as far as you know, civilians.
Yes.
Was that helpful than being more informal, or were they still fairly hard on you?
No, there was no sense of being pushed. As you were in the army, nothing like being drilled or drilled. It was very informal, and I think we learned better that way. That we probably had a rapport there that helped.
Now, you were still officially at Catterick. I mean, obviously you were, but you were under Catterick's orbit.
Yeah.
And then the next course that I have from it is you went to the Bovington Armoured Fighting Vehicle Centre.
Yes.
That was in April 1942. Now, there you went to dealing with, tanks and armoured cars, I presume. What was the setup of that? Because I don't know much about that, the centre. That was within the Bovington camp, was it, or was it separate?
Yes, it was within the Bovington camp. I've never actually found out where, although I've become a friend of the Bovington Tank Museum recently. I've got to make time to try and go over there one day and find out where these workshops must have been, if they still exist. All I remember about the place in those days is that as you drove up to the camp, or were driven to the camp, the entrance had one of these Great War tanks on a plinth there, and I believe that's gone now. It's probably been taken inside now, but the situation has changed there considerably. But anyway, most of the time we spent inside this workshops where we had to make things to high standards.
Such as?
Well, such as one of the exercises they gave us to do was to make a piece of square metal fit inside another piece of metal. You first had to make a square hole in a square piece of metal, probably about a centimetre thick, something like that. It was a mild steel. And you had to do all this by hand. So you'd use a hacksaw to cut the piece of metal first to the required size. then you would have to file it so that it was almost polished. So you had to file it with various different types of files. Coarse file to start with to get it down to roughly to the size, and then finish it off to the exact size with smooth files. Then you had to make this square in the middle of this block. So you'd start off by drilling holes in it. You'd mark it out, you'd scribe it out first, and then you'd drill holes in it so that by connecting the drill holes together, you had enough space to put a hacksaw blade through and work around to cut a rough square out. And then again, you'd have to finish off the internal square with files and get that to the right size.
And what degree of accuracy were you looking for? Was there a sort of measurement you were, you know?
It must have been very fine. I should think, you know, down to about a millimetre at the most. Tolerance.
A millimetre?
Probably, yes. So that this, once you've cut another piece of metal out to fit into this square, which you'd ruined the internal square by drilling it, so you had to make another piece of metal to fit exactly into that. It took an awful long time.
That sounds like a trade test to me. I mean, was it formally known as a trade test, or was this just how you learnt accuracy?
Yes, it was a trade test. Yes, it was a fitter's basic trade test.
And you, I'm presuming you passed?
Yes.
How long would that take?
The whole course... making the object.
Yeah, making this square with a square in it.
Well, but the whole course lasted 4 weeks. I would imagine that making that square, I would imagine we had to go back to that day after day and do a bit more, because I don't think we were spending the whole day on it. I think they would have probably found that very boring, you know, to do that all day. So I would imagine we took about a week to finish that object in between other exercises.
Now, what else were you doing there? You were, this was a fitter's course.
Mm.
What else did they make you do?
We had a similar setup there as at Catterick. We had wheels and tracks, so we went out in vehicles and did a bit of driving, and also we would stop. If it was a tank or a vehicle, we'd stop at some convenient point, and then they would all get out and we'd be a bit of maintenance. And,
which vehicles were you in? Do you recall which tanks or track vehicles?
I seem to remember Remington carriers, and the ordinary wheeled vehicles would be 1500 weights mainly. Morris commercials, Bedfords, Fords. Occasionally 3-ton trucks.
But it wasn't tanks, it was Bren carriers for the track part.
Yes, or some of these older tanks like we had at Catterick. I was going to bring my tank book down, we could do that later, and locate one for you.
So you just drive out. Was this driving training as well, or was this mainly as a fitter being shown?
Mainly as a fitter, there wasn't too much driving involved. They were probably demonstrating things that could happen to tanks by taking us out. We may possibly on some occasions have been just passengers in the tank while things were being demonstrated.
What sort of thing were they showing you?
Well, they would lift things up like the engine covers, and they would also point out certain features of the trucks. Tracks and rollers and things that could go wrong with those.
So this was really practical demonstrations of problems that could arise with both tracked and wheeled vehicles.
Yes.
And was there anything in particular you remember that there? Or any particular type of problem that they were prone to?
Really, no. That particular course, although it was 4 weeks, I've only got vague memories of the entire thing. I mean, for instance, I don't remember what we did there for entertainment. I don't ever remember going out of the camp while we were there. I think it was too far from other places, and there weren't any facilities for going out. There was probably a nappy there. I would think there would be a nappy there.